Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Hello, hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hey, guys.
And this is the new and improved slash reduced down to 1 a week style podcast that we're going to trial for a bit, which might go back into 2, might go back into 3. But for now, thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to dive into all things relating to Sekiro because this is currently consuming our lives.
Yes.
What? A game.
I dove in at midnight. I had it preloaded. We've obviously played it beforehand because we were lucky enough to go down to different press events and all that type jazz. But I just kind of just wanted to get general thoughts. We'll just see how we go. I played till 3 a.m. and then it's so Moorish. Everything kind of relates to everything else. You fight an enemy, you get flattened 20 times, and then you're like, oh god, I'll go and get a skill, but I need to grind some XP, so I'll go and wipe some dudes out, and then I fight the thing, and then all of a sudden it's 3 a.m. and I should probably go to bed.
Now,
what do you think?
Now this is the thing. I absolutely adore Dark Souls, adore Bloodborne, and I absolutely feel like Demon's Souls is still the most underrated one out of the entire bunch.
Ooh.
But this might actually
combat
be...
Combat wasn't great though, was
this,
it?
But this still might actually be my favourite game of the series.
Nice.
And I'm not... And I know people are going, oh, it's not related. If you've played the game, you'll know that there are a lot of links between the world of this feudal Japan and the... undead, dying, hollowing state of beyond. Like, there is a lot more than originally was announced in the trailer, so therefore I feel like the comparison is apt.
I'll quickly mention as well, just because, like, obviously if you're a Hardcore Souls fan, then, like, any sort of boss descriptions are sometimes classed as spoilers, but I kind of class spoilers as narrative stuff, plot type stuff. So we're going to dive, we're not going to dive into the story too, well, hardly at all, really, other than the base premise
of
you're a
samurai. The story is very, you're a shinobi dude.
In fact, the story has been completely outlined in the English trailers that dropped about 2 days ago, which was one of the weirdest experiences. And we will obviously talk about the game in great detail, but the marketing for it has been one of the strangest things I've seen, because it's been handled by Activision and because it's been sort of being pushed for a Western audience.
You can really tell.
Well, the fact that the trailer was like, welcome to Sekiro. You play as the lone wolf and you will
one
have
one man
to,
goes yeah, up against
it was,
the
it
thing.
Was very much, and that
one man with one arm.
Yeah, literally.
Like, we all played different builds of the game, and I would say that one of the biggest charms about it was that it was in its native language and it felt very connected to its source material of the mythology and the Japanese folklore. So to hear it pitched back at you as a westernized, like, it's a tale of revenge and you're the only man, I was like, ooh, I hope there's an option to turn
I do
off
love that,
that
though, that yeah. when it defaults to Japanese, then
which
you can
nice.
Switch it to English. I've not done that. I like it being Japanese.
Yeah, me too.
But it's interesting because you think about From Software's like history, they're sort of this like beloved, like, I don't know, initially like indie dev that have only gotten bigger. And then now it's like this sided with Activision, like, you know, one of the biggest third party publishers in the industry right now. And it's like this is their play for a massive wider audience.
It is absolutely Activision's involvement because like, I mean, I've got a lot of friends who have always heard me banging on about Dark Souls but never wanted to pick that up. And now all of a sudden everyone is getting Sekiro. So whatever Activision are doing, it is working for the wider public, so, and I'm all for it. I'm all for letting people get into this series.
Yeah,
unbelievably.
I think it's worth talking about that as well, because, like, do you guys think that this is the most accessible one so far?
Absolutely, and I would argue, as you may have heard in my review, which went live yesterday, is that, you know, it has the most gentle tutorial out of any Dark Souls or Bloodborne kind of game that I've ever played.
Well, you can hang out with that dude who can't die.
I love him. Yeah, I love
punching.
Handy Andy, my punching bag. I love him so much. He's such a bro. But yeah, it's so accessible. You don't even start out with a flipping weapon. The game teaches you mobility and stealth, and then it teaches you combat, and then it teaches you advanced combat. I'm tripping over my words because I'm so excited. It's so... good. It's so accessible. They've clearly learned from their previous achievements, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and then some.
So. I'll tell you something that I initially thought I was going to tweet this, but I thought I'll just describe
wow.
it.
Wow. Hold on, guys. What's that? Fresh off the press. We're getting yeah. a Scott take that he held on for more than 3 minutes.
Sometimes you got to get them out there every now and then. But I think the take of the Sekiro thing. Remember the first time you played Resident Evil 4? I think I told this to Rich when we were on lunch before.
Oh, I remember this.
Remember this back in the day and the first time you shot that shotgun? And it was like, cool. It was like the big like kickback, and you're like, yeah. oh God, this is next yeah. level. Like, I remember the first time I did that. Mm. I will remember for the rest of my days the first kill that I have in Sekiro. Because I think they really, like the camera shakes and you've got all this like vibration in the controller and your dude just buries the blade in the guy's face. And it's just like,
after
yeah,
sneaking up behind him.
You can
I
if
love
you want. Yeah, yeah.
The stealth in this game as well. Like,
it's like everything is so punchy. When, and it's yeah. like, yeah.
When the death blow is about to be struck, that lovely piercing ringing noise, like, it goes like ping like that. I'm like, ooh, that's
it's time
satisfying.
To kill.
That is satisfying. That
I guess you might as well break down. Like, that's another thing as well. Is just like, yeah, it has access to potentially the biggest audience so far, and you have, you know, this really nice like gentle tutorial. Like, do you think that is them saying like, we're going to actually allow ourselves to get more people
right.
in?
I will say though that this game, I still think
it's brutally hard.
We should not paint this as anything other than being incredibly challenging.
Yeah,
but the variety and the options and the directions that you can take, even just by going off the beaten path, can lead you spending hours going in a completely different direction. It's made a game feel that no matter what roadblock you come up against, you'll always be able to find another route around until you get better or level up yeah. and get more skills to come back and beat that challenge. Because I've hit 2 or 3 major roadblocks at the moment,
right.
and I was struggling a bit with them. I won't spoil where they are, but after just going to myself, oh, I wonder if I can get there, that led to a whole yeah. hour and a half going down a brand new path that's right. led me up into an area that is so different to where I started out that I feel like it would be even a massive spoiler saying what type of environment it is.
It is the same kind of style that we saw in the first Dark Souls that personally I loved so much, where it was like, if you're playing it blind, if you went in a certain direction and it seemed too difficult, chances are you probably weren't meant to go that way. Mm-hmm. And I love that Sekiro has that. Yeah.
The cemetery with the skeletons.
Exactly.
Like, oh, yeah.
Hit it on the head there. So you would go down there and then they'd start respawning and you'd maybe think, oh God, there's probably a different way I should be going.
Plus, like, I mean,
Sekiro has that.
Yeah, in my like initial play, because we, like I said, we were lucky enough to play like a few hours down in London and stuff. And I remember when we went through that, like, you really do need to pay attention to like the fact that you can eavesdrop on people because they'll hint where different weapons are.
I love that.
Because the first time through, I didn't even get the axe when I was in the Harada Estate, which is the first dream bit at the very beginning. And so I know you did. And but since having that in my new playthrough, you just cleave through the shields and you finish them off. It's almost like you're supposed to find the damn thing.
And how satisfying is that now?
Well, it's good, but I also was like, dear sweet Lord, I could have got so much further in my initial playtest if I had that.
Can we just take a brief moment to talk about the prosthetic weapons? Mm. Because I feel like that is something that I really want to push to anyone listening to this now, thinking that, I might not pick it up because of the fact that you only have that one weapon, the blade, to start out with. The prosthetic weapons are so unique, customizable,
and can be added
into combat in so many different ways that it actually does allow you to customize a play style around these three maximum that you can hold at any one time.
So it's essentially like your light attacks are, there's always the sword, and then your R2 or your right trigger is always the heavies.
With the current skill set that I've got, and this isn't a spoiler because of the fact it's one of the very early skills you can pick up, it's I've got a follow-up attack called Fang and Blade, which is if I use a certain prosthetic and then tap the attack button afterwards, he'll do a rolling cartwheel that then does massive damage.
What?
So it's a really nice move, and it's become so ingrained into my regular moveset that I don't actually use the prosthetic for what it's meant to be used for. I use it in combat to help me out in other situations.
I love that. You can play the game how you feel most comfortable playing it. Like, for example, I'm really, really enjoying the feeling of getting a deflection. Like, I really like dodging combat in Sekiro, but deflection is where it's at, in my opinion. So I'm concentrating personally on, you know, getting the timings right, you know, like that ding, ding, ding over and over again.
That's the thing to really highlight is, like, they've put so much impetus on, like, you know, you have your dedicated L1 one block, you tap it at the right time, you'll parry. But if you, like, obviously if you get it exactly right, you'll kind of decimate your opponent's posture and then you can finish them off. And so that was the thing that initially I was like, man, every encounter kind of feels the same. Like, I'm just waiting for the attack, I'm blocking it, and then I'm going in. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So if we look at the basic enemy types that you'll meet within the first, say, hour of gameplay.
Man with sword.
Yeah, man with sword.
Like, even, with
even, even they have varying levels of how you're meant to go against them, because it actually goes to different Japanese fighting styles. I looked into this last night. If you see any guys with the wide-brimmed hats and the reed armor,
yeah, they're harder.
They actually wait for you to attack to block you, and then they'll only attack after you.
Oh, hell,
and
that's cool.
So it's a nice little thing that every single enemy, if you look at their armor type, you can get a feel for what type of thing
they're doing. Yeah, because I think I sort of realized that without realizing that I realized it. Because if I have the choice to stealth kill one enemy in a group of enemies, I'll always go for the guy with the big hat.
Yeah, yes. Totally. And
But isn't that great sort of like enemy design where subconsciously you're like, oh, I know that fighting them's hard, so I'm going to take that guy out first. And later on, I'm just going to say, some of the guys...
Oh, God!
Imagine that, but with... four more swords?
Yeah. What, one dude and four swords?
Does he hold like two in each of his feet?
Like General Grievous.
General Grievous has got nothing on some of the guys later on in the game.
General Shinobi.
Yeah.
Kind of a fan?
I knew he would come. Hello.
Oh, God, that just took me a while, but okay.
General Shinobi.
I was just like, oh, yeah, sure, but okay.
Hello there.
I do want to mention as well, like, I absolutely love that they tie, like, they give you a skill tree for the first time in a Souls game. Like, and you know, you're buying specific abilities from, like, a, you know, a specific tree and stuff, which you get like a knee slide, and there's like the whirlwind
abilities are great
spin. But I love that they tie that into specific enemies as well, because I find myself going, like, we've covered, like, you can kind of go like down different paths, you might end up with a play wall, as Jules calls it, and then you go the other way. But, like, you know, I, at the minute where my save is, I'm fighting against the shinobi hunter, and one of his attacks is this like unblockable spear thrust. But if you, like, just go past the first tier on the skill tree, you can get the Makiri counter, which is a spear specific counter, so you're encouraged to go back and grind out some enemies, get some XP or whatever they call it, and get a spear counter and then fight the shinobi again. Same with the opening ogre fight. Like, he's much easier if you have the flame vent.
But you can
totally miss those things. But, like, you know, all that stuff is connected. The environment is connected to the skill tree, which is connected to the
love
the
it.
Enemies.
It's so perfectly paced. I love how it is paced. And this was my main point of my review, is that it's set up in such a way that you will come up against one of these play walls, eventually manage to get past it, feel powerful for a bit, and then if you come up against something that makes you intimidated, you can go off in a different direction and probably find something to then come back with. It's perfect.
So let's talk, like, I'll go on.
I was just going to say, like, pacing in this game is incredibly well thought out, because you will find your little clumps of regular enemies. There will always be like a named person there to test you. I like to think of it as just like skill tests, effectively. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a boss basically around the corner. But even when you've just killed a boss, it will then be like only a matter of minutes until you're running into the next named one. And like the amount of enemies to kill, sub-bosses and major shinobi bosses as well, you're just kind of like, my God, there's a lot. This game is dense.
It's a lot. Exactly. A lot of it packed into tiny little spaces between the checkpoints. Can I just give a love letter to how many flipping checkpoints are in this game, by the way?
I reckon that will annoy, like, the most ardent of dogs.
No way. I mean, last night I was trying to progress on a boss that was literally, there was checkpoint, there was a little bit of running, maybe 10 seconds of running, and then there was the boss.
Literally give me a checkpoint next to the boss.
Do you know what? I didn't mind. It was a surprise. And then I was like, oh God, I need this checkpoint.
Right. However, I'm going to play devil's advocate and say that I actually think this might be one of the weaker aspects of the game. Not because of the checkpoint system itself, but because of how the checkpoints are handled in the menu. I would like it so that if, for example, I'm selecting where I want to travel next, and it goes, say, I don't know, this shrine, let's just say shrine, it should say on that who is around there, as in, have I met a vendor? Have I met a person there?
Oh, you want a bit of hand-holding, do you, Jill?
Well, it's not necessarily hand-holding. It's just that there is one particular example where in the space of about 3 minutes, I found three checkpoints. And I was like, that's going to get confusing.
I guess you would have to then travel there to sort of recognize it and then look around and you'd probably have to do a bit of jumping.
But maybe that's just because I was in a Nexus hub style area. So maybe it was just leading me into these different paths. And I just happened to run into these areas.
There was a bit in Dark Souls 3. It was like near the end where I can't even think what you call the massive boss that you fight. It's during
the Koss, often a Koss.
Like, no, and it's like one
that's
of the Dragon
Blood
Riders
Burn,
or something.
Oh, it is.
But anyway, near the end of like Dark Souls 3, and you beat this guy, and you've just had a bonfire beforehand. You beat him, another bonfire appears ahead.
It's in the Grand Cathedral.
Yeah, there's all the dragons flying around you when you're fighting.
You know the
Dark Souls 3.
The wax-head guys in the scholars.
Oh, the Dragon Slayer armor.
Yeah. You kill one guy and you run into the library, the giant art.
You can see the next bonfire from the bonfire. Other bonfire.
I'm never going to say no to a good bonfire. I love a good bonfire.
I love, one of my pet peeves in gaming is bad checkpointing or annoying. Don't waste my time. Put me next to the challenge and I'll do the challenge. So I think that, on the development side, they must go back and forward so much deciding exactly where the bonfires are going to go. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the idea that more people are playing this one because of the Activision influence and stuff, or the reach.
And the fact that the combat is flipping difficult.
Let's just talk general, just kind of where we're at with it. Because I'm way more used to the combat now. When we initially played it, I went from doing the Devil May Cry 5 review, which is 20 hours in a weekend, to going straight into Sekiro.
It still blows my mind how much time you spend on that game in such a consolidated effort. I know you now.
All the time you spend painting figures, I'm playing games.
Hey, you all right?
That was going to be a good thing. Because I went from DMC straight into Sekiro, I started playing Sekiro, jumping around, trying to do aerial attacks, trying to kick off the wall and stuff. And you can do those things. But since going back to Bloodborne and kind of reacquainting myself with From Software and the way the hit attack of Miyazaki designs storytelling, or the way that those games kind of flow, patience is the priority and you can't just leap in. And that's one of the best things, is to steel yourself that way. And it's way more rewarding that way. And just walking this tank of capability.
Yeah.
And just taking stuff on. So I don't know how you guys have found, if you've had to draw on older FromSoft stuff or you're playing it like a new game. I'm kind of, the way that I managed to get through it without losing my mind was to go, okay, I remember how to play these games. I'm going to take it slower.
I can tell you that there's an example that I'm still stuck on at the moment. There's a named character in an area and I'm playing the game very dodge heavy. Mm. I parry when I feel like there's an obvious wind up, but most of the time I'll try and dodge to get behind someone rather than do anything else. This named character specifically is next to impossible to dodge.
I will need
to get better at the parrying to beat this. And I know that because I was analyzing the arena. I was analyzing everything else. There is no advantage I can get from trying to dodge. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to have to get better at blocking, which is fine because it's a named character. I see that as being, it's an optional sub boss. I don't gain anything other than a bit of player advancement with the prayer beads that you get for killing each of the name bosses, but it's not blocking any access, so I feel okay
with
that.
Right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm looking forward to like going up against a boss that is just going to be like just clashing swords every 2 seconds, like tap 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 tap, like blah 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 blah.
Oh no, right. You're not. Oh, no, you're not.
Yeah, Rachel and I shooting a no.
That's what I thought. So I have come up against what I have now found out recently is not the last boss, but I tell you what, it feels like the last boss, and okay. It's been a long time actually since probably Nameless King Dark Souls 3 is probably the last time I came up against something that I was just so stuck on. That it's actually sort of, I was weeping. I was so upset.
This is getting me down.
It was, it's pure combat. There's no gimmicks to it. I can't just stealth up behind him and take out a pip. I have to, and then, I really, really don't want to spoil it because it is.
Well, you can still, I don't think that combat spoilers are like that much of a thing.
Well,
I don't mind taking the wrath of it if it is.
There's some lovely surprises in this encounter, put it this way.
I think as long as you don't name exactly if it's a story-centric character or whatever, you can describe the fight itself.
It is a story-centric character.
Okay, well, just don't say who it is, but you go up against
basically,
someone.
So this is the ultimate test of my deflection skills, basically.
Nice.
And I thought that's what I wanted. And now that I've got it, I realize it's... do you know what, though? It is incredibly fun to learn.
Yeah.
Like, that is one thing I really like about the bosses in this game. They're all so different, and they all have a kind of thing about them that you can use to kind of learn to defeat them. And I'm really enjoying figuring out what that is. But with this one, I know how to do it.
Have either of you guys come close to like having to fight the rage inside you? Kind of go like,
oh yeah,
calm,
the name character that I was telling you about, I fought probably about 30 times now.
Right.
And I was like, I just went, okay, fine. One more time. And I started speaking out loud, and I just went I was like, that's stupid. Why did I do that? Mm-hmm. Why did I do that? Come on, just watch.
Well,
I totally beat myself up while I'm playing. I'm like, for goodness sake, Rachel, you're an idiot.
I do that to certain degrees, and then I'm just like, no, the way to get through it is to go calm and read the animations and pick your spots and your moments and strike. And so like, but if we're sharing like, oh God, that was entirely my fault stories, then like that ogre, like that thing. Yeah.
His hitbox is actually questionable.
Like, yeah. When he dives at you, if you don't jump over that, he'll just grab you anyway. Finally, like after like playing against him for 3 hours in the pre-release, and then like going up against him this time, my heart was like going crazy, getting him like down. I got him right down to the last little sliver of health on the second pip. A couple more hits and I could have done it. I should have known that the whole get good
You got greedy.
Well, I was at that point, like this was an earlier playthrough before I got used to like exactly how to take him on, to use the fire. And so I was like trying to attack him and stuff, got him right down to a tiny little sliver of health, and I was so used to just jumping out the way of stuff that I jumped over him, and I hit him for the last attack. He went to stagger, so all I needed was the one hit, the red pip. I jumped all the way off and fell off the cliff.
No.
In fact, I didn't die. I came back to the cliff and reset his health.
Yeah, I was about to
say. And so I was like, okay.
I mean, as painful as that is, how cool is it that jumping off a cliff doesn't kill, you know?
It resets the health, though. But that was entirely me,
and
I could kill myself.
It's stories like that that just make these games. But as painful as they are, like, how good is it just to go to your...
When I finally defeated him, my heart was like, I almost had a palpitation,
There was one moment where I'd found another named character that was just blocking my path again. And I was like, okay, this guy is really annoying me because the arena that we're fighting in is way too small, in my opinion, for what I need to be able to do. And then I was like looking around, and I was like, okay, have a look around the environment. And I spotted that there's an area to fall down onto the person and do damage.
And then I was like,
this just got a lot easier.
and then
as I like fell on him, I was like, take that, you
bro! Well, that was the thing, like the Shinobi Hunter, who's like my current roadblock. You guys are way further than me, but like that thing with the Shinobi Hunter, if you sneak in the tall grass around him, you can stealth kill, remove a pip, and
there's
go from
usually
there.
A way, like I mentioned before, there's usually a way to make the encounter easier for yourself.
But
usually
also,
using stealth, but oh God, there's some that are not.
Yeah,
the onset of dread now, if I come up against a sub-boss and there is no way to take down an instant pip, I'm like, like, oh God, I'm going to have to be good now. I hope I pack my big boy trousers because this is going
to
be a fun ride.
I kind of like, I don't know if I would appreciate like a you know, bring up the pause menu and just go back to checkpoint like straight away. Because like sometimes you know, it's like any game, you want to go in with your best build. And as soon as the start opening of a fight doesn't go your way, it's like, okay, well, I might as well just restart then.
Oh, I see. Well, there is your sort of homeward bone item that you've got, your idol that
but
takes
it
you back.
It takes a little bit while to go.
It's a heck of a like wind up that, yeah.
Even the wind up on a lot of the heavy attacks, like especially again, my go-to example, because I was fighting him at 3 in the morning, is the Shinobi Hunter, because it was just like, I'm going to do the heavy attack, I got stabbed. I'm going to do the flame bird, I got stabbed. And it's just like trying to like, you know, like figure out like a way to defeat him. But obviously the go-to with him is the Makiri counter. And so like that kind of helped and stuff. But I don't know, just, I guess it's just like general opinions on like, because it is the most accessible, especially at the beginning. But then its learning curve is like a brick wall, or it's razor sharp anyway.
You grow along with it, I would say. Like, especially with me, like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not great at this game, but I am like really enjoying sort of building upon my own skills as I go through it.
I think one of the things that it does extremely well is you know exactly where you went wrong. Like for the most part, like I'm like, I shouldn't have jumped off that cliff.
Every death is a learning experience.
At the moment, I haven't encountered any death that I felt is ridiculously cheap, except for one which involved a bloody cannon. It was like,
there's oh, that guy.
Imagine that guy, but you're trying to fight some other like very other big dudes, and all of a sudden you just hear this like and you can imagine
you know it's coming.
It's like the Wile E. Coyote holding up a sign and going, uh-oh. It's like smashed.
So was that one of the first times that you died like in the middle of a fight?
I died.
Because that guy is annoying.
I died in the middle of a fight and I could see that there was a sculptor's idol within eyeshot, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go activate that in a minute. I'll just take out these guys. And I died and had to go all the way back, and I was like,
That's worth picking up.
That's not my fault.
One of the things that they always had, because remember the first time in the first Souls when you're just like killing off grunt enemies and all of a sudden they do that attack where it's like a 7-hit flurry. And they just sort of
the regular ones.
And you don't expect it. And it takes you by surprise. It takes a huge chunk off your health. And you're like, well, I thought I was fine because I'm 15 hours in. This for me has that equivalent of that, where I was like, I was on the way to I was just farming XP to get some more skills.
Are you going
to
say the guy with the torch?
I'm not, but he might as well be.
Oh, I got wrecked by the torch guy.
Sorry, farm torch guy sucks. But like, just one time I just jumped down, landed on a guy, and I was like, I'm just going to take out the dude next to him. So I went to do like a full flurry. He just blocked it and attacked me back and killed me. But I had enough to resurrect. But I was like, okay, then I can't just treat them as grunts. You have to kind of treat them with respect every time.
Everyone can kill you.
It still punishes you if you try to rush through. However, I have noticed that if you die enough, you become quite creative with how to get around the environment to do it. There's one long stretch that I just needed to get to this bloody boss. And to go through it, there was just it was a slog of very tough enemies that would require thought,
like,
and patience. But then
after
about like sort of like 15 minutes of just constantly just trying to work my way through, I was like, oh, there's a tree up there actually. So went back to the bonfire, to the sculptor's idol, reset it, and then immediately just ran and jumped as far as I could. And just at the bottom of my thing, it then suddenly clicked in that I could jump on it, made my way up there, found a little secret path, and I was like, ah, this cuts out all of these. And it literally was a road to the boss. Like,
that is
like,
so satisfying. What incredible world design. That's so good.
That's actually, I guess it's worth quickly addressing the fact that the file size of the whole thing is like 16 gigs.
What the hell?
Tiny.
Yeah,
or at least it's tiny by like contemporary comparisons or whatever.
But I do not know where they're hiding the rest of this game, because we thought originally that it was just going to be sort of like pagodas and sort of like the classic sort of like feudal Japan architecture. And we thought maybe that could be replicated quite easily. The area that I'm at now is so dense in detail that I'm so surprised. I'm staggered at how good it looks.
I think it's just because everything's handcrafted and hand designed. They haven't used photogrammetry, which is where you scan in thousands of photos. They haven't like.
Well, you mean that giant albino snake wasn't from real life?
I don't think so. I mean, for the most part, in terms of like detailing that world, they haven't spent like 50,000 hours detailing the last leaf or whatever. Like, it's more the overall. Like, it looks like a big oil painting. It's got this really gorgeous sort of art direction to it. But yeah, the overall file size is like 16 gig, but you contrast that with like Red Dead 2, which is like 90 gig.
Yeah.
And it's obviously Red Dead 2 is bigger in every regard. Yeah. But I think in this, like from what I can pick up, like I think it's a series of like open spaces, and it's just like, you know, there's detail there. Mm-hmm. But like in terms of how you're progressing through, like I guess you're rerunning the same areas over and over. That's what gives it its length.
They've been incredibly clever in how they are masking what corridors and like this whole like sort of like hub, because Dark Souls had this amazing thing where somebody actually painted the entire world and showed how everything connects. And when you actually see it all together, you're like, oh, that actually, that geography makes sense.
It makes physical
sense. And even when you're like in Dark Souls 3, you can look off in the distance and actually see elements of the game that you're going to be approaching.
Two's the only one that doesn't behold to that.
Of course. Of course it was.
Well, of course you're going to say that, but like.
Of course it was two. The worst one in the series. Yeah.
Two is all a dream, okay? Stop pipping on two.
That gets around the fact you can see a lava castle below you that you then go up into.
Yeah, bizarre. Sure. Absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. They've pioneered that for so long, like the interconnected world. And I remember even in the pre-release stuff, like you were off fighting the Shinobi Hunter and I swam down the river, I fought a catfish and then I went off and dovetailed off down some bamboo forest.
Oh, but like, heck, there was fish by then.
But it's like, you know, little paths still exist.
I did encounter my first glitch.
Okay.
No.
I had a bad one before launch, but yeah.
I've saved it on my PS4 when I'll share it with you guys. Nice. Or probably on Twitter later. And it's swimming along, just mind my own business. Spot something swimming towards me and I'm like, ooh, that little fish.
Nice fish.
Go and stab it. Just passes straight through and I'm like, okay, maybe it's a ghost.
Can you attack in the water?
You can attack in the water. Yeah. If you go press circle and attack, you'll do like a speedboat where you stab forward and zoom. Anyway, right.
Speedboat.
So I get out, draw myself off, and I'm just thinking like, what was that thing that just attacked me? And then I realize, wait a minute, I shouldn't be looking at the lake because the fish is now out of the lake and now swimming towards me on the air itself. And I was there like, okay. And it only took one hit to kill it.
Okay.
But the fish was like rabid. It was like, oh my God. And it was about,
he must have been so confused.
About 3 or 4 foot above the water. And I was there like,
Some of the scariest glitches in games is like any sea animal on land. Like a shark or something just like flying through the,
I don't know if you guys know this about me, but I'm terrified of open waters. Like, it's the concept of not being able to see what's underneath
me
that really like freaks me out. Yep. I'm fine on a boat, but if you put me in the water, I would feel very uncomfortable because I would be out of control.
Oh, I just never want to travel by boat ever. But fair.
But you understand the thing. So Sekiro is so convincing in being afraid of everything that I just jumped into a little pond that's outside of a castle. Aww. And all of a sudden, like, you know when you press the lock on button, just see if there's anything around.
Oh no.
I clicked down and it locked onto something directly below me.
Nope.
Right.
Nope.
It clicked onto something below me and I couldn't attack it and I couldn't do anything against it. And I don't know if it was just a thing that had swum away, but I was bricking it. I literally could not get out of that lake quick enough because I just thought, oh, what's going to happen now? I'm just gonna get eaten like by a giant.
Yeah,
fish,
like a big eel that comes out. Maybe if you sit there long enough.
I think we're pretty much out of time, but I do want to just quickly talk about like that atmosphere because like that's what contributes to it being so like
fear.
Yeah, like relentless and exhausting. Is like they kind of bring just enough of the horror stuff from Bloodborne. Like you do get jump scares, like whether it's a giant oversized rooster or just like something that just kicks you from out of frame. Like and it has like a horror sensibility to its art direction. Like, you know, you have a macabre like bolted back together prosthetic arm, which is kind of, and you're undead as well.
Compare it more to a thriller. Personally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that for me, it's like there's bloods everywhere. There's like, there is like an element of gore to it. Like, I do think some of the visuals are like horrifying, like the ogre's face or whatever.
Can we tell Scott and the listeners about, I'm trying to look at you to gauge how I get around this, like, for spoilers.
Do it.
The enemy that screams before it appears on screen.
Well, you can just describe it as that.
Yeah, okay. There's an enemy that
screams at you first.
You're just running along, mind your own business, and all you'll hear is like, like that, and then all of a sudden you'll see it go whoom, like that straight into combat with you. It's
I haven't come across that yet. But there is
you have, because we've been through the same area. But it just, I don't know if it did it.
Maybe
to
it
you.
Doesn't.
It reminds me of an enemy that I came across in Ashen, and that terrified me. So,
is there anything that you found so far that's as bad as the barking crows from Bloodborne?
Yep,
because those things were horrifying.
You've used that, and the enemy that I'm stuck on is that.
Oh, good.
But not a crow.
It's a barking crow.
Imagine that, but as a full sub boss.
Okay. Yum. I mean, I think FromSoft have a knack to do oversized enemies. Like the first time I saw that massive rat in Dark Souls.
No. I don't mean in terms of the. I'm talking about how the crow attacks.
Oh, okay.
Rather than flops
a bit.
Because that's the best thing about the Bloodborne thing, is you think that, it's just a bunch of dead crows over there. I'll just
piece
walk
of piss,
over.
Yeah,
it just leaps up and just tries to take your face off.
Isn't the lore of the Bloodborne crows that they've eaten so many bodies that they're too fat to
that's
walk?
That's great.
To fly.
Isn't that what they're meant to be?
That makes perfect sense, because like, obviously crows hoard stuff in general. That's great.
It could be. I know the ones in like the later game have all been experimented on and But yeah, with Sekiro, with Dark Souls, with all of them, I think a lot of it is the element of surprise, the element of I hate the phrase, but it is all about getting good.
Yeah. Oh.
It's overcoming it. It's overcoming
it. Did you have
it.
To?
It's,
are you spelling that with a G-I-T or a G-O-O-D?
It's true, though. It's true. It's all about, you know, going through an area, getting through all the jump scares.
Getting flattened and then learning to stand back up
and then
again.
Getting to a boss and then manage to overcome him. It's honestly, it's spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that the only thing I can add to that is if you are worried that this game is going to be just another example of a game that requires just pattern memorization, it's not as, it doesn't lean as heavily on that as the Dark Souls games did because it, you have so many combat options available to you that means that you can approach it in many different ways.
The thing that I love the most about it is that it feels like, because I love watching like whether it's a band or just like an artist or whatever, like sort of like, you know, find their footing and expand in like really good, meaningful ways. And this, like I said at the beginning, like feels like From Software going like, yep, this is our next stage. We've partnered with Activision, but we've played our cards right. And it's still like, you know, it's exactly what they wanted to make. It's not, it hasn't got microtransactions in it. It's not got horrible DLC practices, like whatever. Ooh. It's entirely their like baby still. And
however,
go on.
I'm so enamored with this game.
You would play more of it.
I would gladly buy DLC.
I wouldn't say no.
Straight away.
No, I think that could be the way that they go with it. But I think that like you see them flexing all these different directions, but it's still them. And like, that's the heart of it. So yes, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. You guys can all find us on social media. I am at @LP89, which I nearly always forget.
You do, actually.
Yeah, I know. I did it right. I've been your host, Scott Hale, but also
joined
by Jules Gill.
I'm Jules. Hi. And you can follow me at RetroJ with a zero over on Twitter.
And Rachel Shackleton.
Well, my tag, because everyone else is doing it these days, is Don't Rage Quit. Guys, I hope you're enjoying Sekiro. Thank you for listening.
Nee Bosch. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.